Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The president of the Kennedy Center in Washington is now consulting with the Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey to try to bring its vision of dance to a national audience. We'll find out why this hour. First up today, food, and more specifically, Kansas City Restaurant Week, which begins today. Great food at discount prices, if you ask food blogger Jonathan Bender. It also means waistlines that expand by one full belt hole. We'll also talk about the ever-changing food scene in town. With us is the aforementioned Jonathan Bender. He's a food writer and blogger. You can see his writing at recommendeddaily.co. Jonathan, nice to have you.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
Jill Silva is the food writer and restaurant critic for the Kansas City Star. She blogs at kansascity.com/chowtown. And Jill, welcome back. Good to have you, too.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Jonathan, how difficult is it to write about food? It seems to me that would be a tough trick to pull off. How tough is it?
The funny thing is I think anybody can write about food because it's about tapping into what you see when you sit down, what you taste, what you feel. And then,
it's politics people can't write about, right? You're going to throw me one here, right?
Well, I mean, that's the nice thing. Everyone can talk about food. With politics, you're going to be a bit divisive. But with food, it's more you're entering into a friendly debate. So for me, the goal is just to give a sense of what it is I'm eating and transport the reader there so that way they can have that moment with that plate, that dish, that drink.
So you don't find it difficult?
I love it. I mean, the truth be told, for me, it's almost genetic. I think my dad used to base road trips around food, so I think he was training me for this job.
Jill, how about you?
Well, you know, Steve, I was a fashion writer before I was a food writer, and I have to say that I think fashion writing is much harder than food writing.
Really?
I love food writing. I think people share. Food's communal. They're not trying to keep recipes from you, really. I mean, I know there's that sort of idea that chefs keep the one ingredient away so that you will not be able to do their recipe. But I don't find that's true. I find people in the food industry are really hospitable. They want to share. They want you to be happy. And so it's really a fun industry to write about. And critiquing is tough.
But so the challenge of it is what?
The challenge is finding words that aren't yum and yuck. Yeah, you have to get beyond that. And you don't want to stretch it so far that it's like sumptuously delicious all the time either. You know, you've got to find new and different ways to describe food.
So you need a vocabulary.
You need a vocabulary. You need your own vocabulary as well. So you'll see certain words are favored by certain writers, I think, around town. And you just want to keep it fresh and interesting, but not be so far out that people go, what? Mm. What is that food? So it's a fun creative exercise.
Jonathan, the challenge for you is what?
I think for me it's finding things that people will be instantly attracted to. So I know you could set down just about anything in front of me and I would eat it. But the goal is to really be able to push people outside their comfort zone. So if you have a barbecue guy, how do you get them to eat sushi? And if you have somebody who's interested in fine dining, how do you get them into a dive bar? And really making people push their own boundaries and having that level of trust with a reader to say, okay, I'm willing to take a leap.
So you're sitting here telling me that you will eat Brussels sprouts.
Oh, without question.
Really?
I mean, they're sliced in half and you add some bacon. I mean, you should go over to the Rieger and have what they have. They're smoked beet Reuben, which comes with Brussels kraut, and it'll change your feeling about
it. Is there
Brussels
anywhere
sprouts.
You won't go?
Off the top of my head.
There's got to be sauerkraut something.
I mean, the only thing that I didn't like was mushrooms, because when I was a kid, my grandmother would make me eat that cream of mushroom soup. But I can tell you since then, even that, I found a way to overcome mushrooms.
Jill, how about you? Do you have a dark spot, a dark
place? I have one thing I was not able to eat, and that was pig snoot. I watched Artie Davis eat it at the Tenderloin Grill, but I just couldn't go there. But I'll eat many other parts that people find a little bit, you know, as long as they're done well. You know, I'm open to it.
But being open-minded, I guess, when it comes to food, I guess that goes part and parcel with the job. You've got to be there.
You've got to be open-minded, yeah. You can't really be a vegan. You really can't be you can enjoy vegan food, but you can't limit your diet. You can't hopefully be gluten-free. That's a tough one. So you want to eat the broadest spectrum of food you possibly can and understand those special diets so you can also write about those and give people recommendations at restaurants because there are a lot of people with a lot of different food allergies and food preferences. And so you need to be really aware of those. And I'm fascinated by them. But for me, I eat everything. Yeah. I'm an omnivore.
Jonathan, how did you sort of get to the place in your life where you decided to write about food? How did you get here?
Well, I moved to Kansas City about 7 years ago, and I've been freelancing for the Kansas City Star and The Pitch. And for the last 4 years, I've been writing for The Pitch's Fat City Food blog. And over time, it found that sweet spot in my heart where I realized this is really where my passion lies, the story ideas that I came up with as well as the things that I really came back to tend to be centered around food. I had a chance to judge the American Royal and delve into a lot of those really interesting people. It seems like we have a real creative push in Kansas City right now, particularly in the food scene. That's where a lot of our activity and interest is.
Joe, I like your story about how you got writing about food at the Kansas City Star. How did you get that position?
Well, 20 years ago, nobody wanted that job. Can you even believe it? Now I have to watch my back. I'm sure everybody would like the job, but it wasn't a popular subject at the time, and it wasn't really given a lot of news credence. You know, it was entertainment. And as we, you know, have become more interested in food, we've also realized that there's just a whole range of food topics out there. Restaurants is the sexy one, and that's the one we like to talk about the most. But of course, I dip my toes in everything. I've done A1 stories on food deserts and GMOs and farmers and, so chefs started out as the rock stars, and I kind of knew I was in the right job, right?
Yeah.
Let's follow this curve. And then, you know, now it's farmers are rock stars, and who knows what will be next, but the food scene is so varied and so fantastic.
I mean, have you noticed, has there been an evolution in our interest in food, not just maybe in Kansas City, but everywhere? It's just sort of an evolving fascination with all this stuff. And you just mentioned chefs, you mentioned, you know, organic farming, as those guys have become people of interest. What have you seen?
Well, I mean, the whole scene has just continued to grow and change. And interestingly, we often think in Kansas City that we're maybe not up to date. But that is...
We change that every day here.
That is not true. Yes, yeah. We are so on top of things. And so I can remember writing about community-supported agriculture, sort of a subscription service for farmers. I read about that in 1999. Mm-hmm. Didn't hear from somebody from the Columbia Journalism Review until the late 2000s going, I just discovered this really cool thing, and I want to talk to you about it. We have that here, you know, and we even have a supermarket that, you know, is experimenting with that idea. And you can see that with our chefs. You can see that with our food artisans all around town. We really, you know, are right there with the nation learning what our food culture is.
Yeah. Jonathan, you've been here for 7 years, you said, but how has, you know, the Kansas City food scene evolved even in that time? Have you noticed a change? Are you seeing things shake out there?
I think we're having a lot more independent restaurants who are working with farmers. And then in addition, I think I've seen consumers change, people who are eating. When you look at what people are trying at home, I think they're being inspired by what they see at restaurants and what they see when they go out. The idea that people are making their own bitters or really getting into this creative, individualized food experience based on what they eat when they go out and then also what they see when they read something it's pretty unique and special, I think, to Kansas City.
So the connection between the farm and the restaurant, that seems to be people a lot more aware of that and who's got what and that kind of thing.
I think so. I think people really do care about where their food comes from, and they also want to know the story behind that, sort of who is the person who's providing this to me? How did my food get to my plate? And, you know, what does that mean for me?
Yeah. Jill, you can go back farther than 7 years. What have you noticed in terms of how the food scene has evolved over those years?
Well, I think it's really important. I learned early on, watch the chefs. Okay, those are our frontline leaders. They're very experimental. They're very creative, and they always want what's kind of new and different. They're looking for new ingredients. So when you start to see back maybe around 2000 that farmers are putting chefs are putting farmers' names on a menu, you're going to go, oh, I should figure out who these farmers are. I should figure out who this artisan cheesemaker is. I should delve into those stories. And like Jonathan said, those stories are fascinating and they're just exploding. I mean, look at how much food media we now have out there. We all can't keep up with it. You know, we're kind of tripping over each other, but there are plenty of stories that also are not getting covered. So watch the chefs, whatever they're interested in, the plating concepts, sous vide, different techniques in the kitchen, different farmers they know.
Yeah.
They always know the first bread maker or, you know, cheese maker or macaroon maker or whatever.
How surprised are you by this explosion of food stuff on cable TV? What do you make of it?
I think we just have a real hunger for information, pun slightly intended.
I
think in addition to chefs are really becoming aware of all of the things they can do to pair not just wine, but beer and cocktails. I mean, to me, that's one of the next big arenas that we're going to see is where all of that spirits are driving the culinary menu and vice versa. Savas just about to open in Westport, which is the champagne bar that Howard Rieger's involved in. And there you're going to see a bar menu that works with a champagne list and things that are going to be, I think, the big focus going forward.
And you would never have seen that in Kansas City 20 years ago, I don't gather.
Jill, you might be able to speak better to that.
I think we were building up to it. But, you know, things are happening here faster and more in concert with the rest of the country. So it's not about waiting for something to get here anymore. We don't have the same density as a San Francisco or a New York City, you know, but we have some of the very same things, charcuterie and fabulous speakeasy bars and, you know, all these cool things. And I think Jonathan's right. We're really, really looking at, now that the chefs have been looking at all these ingredients, now the bartenders are really taking off. And they're looking at homemade ingredients. And they want their own herb garden. And they want to infuse their own stuff. So we are getting back in front of the house, similar mindset. And it's very experimental. And it's really benefiting the consumer.
So any notion that Kansas City is not on the cutting edge when it comes to food, you're not buying it.
I'm not buying it. No, not absolutely not. And this past summer was driving me crazy. We were on every single list you could think of for some reason. I mean, some of the lists are great. Some of them are ridiculous. We were on the top beer garden list. I'm sorry. I'm not sure how many beer gardens we really have in Kansas City. But just trying to keep up with those lists that are honoring us, you know, as the best bartender, the best bar, new bar this year. We were on the cover of Savour magazine, beautiful chicken from Rye. So, you know, man, we're out there, and the rest of the country knows we're here. And I recently got an email from somebody who's coming through in May. He's a sommelier in Berlin. And he grew up in in Texas, but he wants to come through Kansas City because he feels like we're the Midwest. He's going to create a farm-to-table restaurant in Berlin. Huh. So, you know, when you think of farm-to-table, what do you think of? You think of the heartland, you think of Kansas City, our area. I think that just shows what kind of influence we have globally.
Jill Silva is here. Jonathan Bender, we're talking about food this morning on Up to Date. And by all means, if you want to join our conversation, you can always do it. And right now is a great time. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org, or tweet us @kcuruptodate. Let's turn to Restaurant Week. What is it, Jonathan? Fill us in.
So it's a basically a 10-day-long event, or 9 days from today until...
So it's not a week. It's more than a week.
It's from this Friday until next Sunday. It's organized by the Greater Kansas City Restaurant Association and the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Bureau. The idea is there's 132 restaurants that are offering prefixed lunches and dinners, $15 for lunch.
Prefixed means what?
It means a set price for a number of courses, so 2, 3, or 4 courses. So $15 for lunch, $33 for dinner, 10% of which goes to Harvesters and two other educational charities. The idea is you can go out and see what any of these 132 restaurants has to offer across the metro area and on out into Johnson County.
Every single restaurant has the same prices for lunch and dinner.
That's correct. But each of them has a menu that they've designed either based off their regular offerings or something special just for Restaurant Week.
So this is the time to get out and explore.
I mean, it's really a chance for you to be able to eat and eat well without breaking your bank.
Jill, I gather there's no coincidence that this Restaurant Week takes place in January, kind of a slow month, I imagine, for restaurants.
A very slow month, yes. And so that's a great time when people are done with the holidays and they might be feeling a little strapped for cash to go ahead and say, look, we've got some great deals for you. Come on by. And they've done a great job over 5 years, and they're making a lot of money for a lot of really good organizations, including Harvesters.
Where do you go to get a list of what all these restaurants are?
You go to KansasCityRestaurantWeek.com. They also have
KansasCityRestaurantWeek.com.
They also have a a free app that you can download for your phone, and you can make reservations or find menus on there.
Well, this is sort of like a film festival to me. These things come up. There are all these films, and the consumer sort of never knows, well, which ones to go to see because they're all new. And, Jonathan, on your blog, you've tried to cut through some of this confusion a little bit because you list five restaurants to check out during Restaurant Week. What did you recommend?
Yeah, we tried to go for a good mix where you would have lunch and dinner options. For lunch, we recommended Tres Amare in the Briarcliff Village. They have an En Fuego seafood stew. That's sort of their liquidy, soupy, hot version of paella. So it's got a saffron and lobster broth, and it really is a nice winter warmer. You'd want to go there when it's about 15 degrees out. And then in addition to that, the Corner Restaurant, which is the reimagined
in Westport.
Exactly.
The old Corner Restaurant.
Right, but this is the new Corner Restaurant.
It ain't what it used to be.
Not in the least. They have a new chef, Mickey Priolo, who has been there about 2 months, and he's really going for that stick-to-your-ribs comfort food with a red bean cassoulet and all these manner of things that are black cherry bourbon sauce on vanilla bean flan. Kind of they'd roll you out of there when you're done.
Are they still doing breakfast there?
They do. The breakfast and lunch are really they're two biggies. But it's probably a bit different than you imagine because it is really more farmer-focused. There's also the Bristol, which is a classic. And for me, it's the chance to, if you love lobster at a budget price, you know, you get their lobster bisque as well as lobster mac and cheese.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
That's great.
Yeah.
Then for dinner, the Le Fou Frog, which is a French bistro, you can get beef au poivre as well as their chasson au poivre, which is a French apple turnover. And it really is it's a special place that I think you typically go for potentially an anniversary or a birthday, but here you could make it just a regular Tuesday night out.
See, we're just close enough to lunchtime, Jonathan, where what you're describing sort of getting to me here a little bit. Jill, do you get real busy and get out to a lot of these restaurants during this time, or how do you roll with all this?
Well, you know, I encourage people to go out, and a lot of my friends do, and I would go out on a friend visit, but it's not really the best time to be doing criticism, I don't think, because it's, you know, it's a little crowded and it's a little off what people usually do.
In fairness to them, they're not geared up maybe for some things.
Right, yeah. So I kind of feel like it's not the time for me to be out being critical, but, you know, I do know a lot of people are really interested in getting to the American. There's a new chef there. A lot of people are kind of intimidated, worried that pricing might be a little too expensive. So when you go to a prefix, something like this, you're going to feel a little more comfortable.
The American still being something of an iconic restaurant
Very
in Kansas
iconic.
City,
yes.
A trendsetter, a pace setter, and people want to know what's going on there, right?
Yeah, and they have a fabulous new chef there. I worked with him on our Thanksgiving issue, and boy, that turkey is the best turkey I think I've ever done in the last 12 years. So I think he's someone to watch, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to be heading over there to check out what he's doing. And it's a great little introductory way to check that out.
I'm embarrassed. I've never been there. You know,
let's go to lunch, Steve.
I need to get there sometimes. It'd be a good time to go to lunch at the American.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a beautiful space.
Yeah. So, again, Restaurant Week is just designed to sort of get people off the couch and get them out there, right?
I think the idea is really to have fun. I mean, there's two places offering maple bacon donuts. You know, I mean, this really isn't meant to be the kind of thing where you're
– Maple bacon donuts?
That's right. So Marv's and Park Place and BRGR Downtown both have their own versions.
Wow.
What is that?
So it's essentially a maple donut that's studded with bacon. I mean, it's going to give you sweet and salty and fatty. It's all of those things you'd want in a country breakfast just in a donut.
All in one simple item, right?
Right. It doesn't come with a cardiologist appointment, but maybe it should.
Yeah. Jonathan, tell us about your blog again. You just started it, recommendeddaily.co, not com, but .co. Why did you start it, and what are you trying to do?
Sure. The basic idea is to bring together the food scene here in Kansas City. So it's all about Kansas City food and drink, and that we have a real opportunity. I think Kansas City is having its moment with Midwestern Fare, and people are hungry for food news as well as, I think, a curated list of where to go to get that one dish or one drink that really makes it worthwhile to visit a restaurant. And so as a result, I wanted to build a community and have a community come together around food and the stories surrounding food here in Kansas City.
You try to make it pretty consumer friendly, it sounds like.
Yeah, the goal to me is to make everything accessible. I mean, I think whether you're in a Thai restaurant in Overland Park or you happen to be going down Independence Avenue, the real aspect that I'm hoping is to encourage people to kind of push themselves and enjoy all of those things that are out there in Kansas City.
How often do you post?
There'll be about 2 to 4 posts a day. And then,
wow.
I know.
Wow.
And then the goal, it's
You're
keeping
working.
Me busy without question. And the goal is to have one larger feature that is about somebody or something that's currently happening.
Are you going to criticize restaurants on your blog too or not?
I think there'll be a critical element. I mean, to me, I do think you have a responsibility that if you have something that is worth pointing out, you have to do it.
Is it just you all by your lonesome?
No, we're bringing on a slate of writers. So Pete Doolin, who's the author of One Last Bite, will be doing some writing for it, as well as some other local writers.
Yeah. Jill Silva, you do your blogging at the Stars Chowtown blog. What are you trying to do there?
Well, we started Chowtown back in May, launched it. What I wanted to do was pull together community experts in the food scene and let them write. And so I've got barbecue expert Artie Davis. I've got Lincoln Broadbrook Books. I'm sorry. I'll say that again. Broad Books at Better Cheddar, and he is a certified, highly skilled cheese monger. Someone who sells cheese.
Wow.
I've got a
cheese monger.
Yeah, I've got chefs. I've got some bartender. Bar people. I've got Doug Frost. You know, I've got people on staff, but also a lot of community members who are checking in weekly with us and telling us what they're interested in.
I imagine trying to keep up with the scene has got to be difficult because this thing is evolving all the time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, new restaurants, new chefs, people coming and going, trying new things. I mean,
it's just unbelievable how much news there is out there. It's nearly impossible. And so one of the things that I really wanted to do with this blog is just call on those people who are already out there in all these different specific areas and get their voice, get their opinions, get their likes, and you'll see just by the way that they write different things, you know, what they're interested in at that moment. And, you know, maybe everybody's interested in that at the moment. You know, you sometimes get a flow of people being interested in the same thing, but then you get all these divergent viewpoints also. And I love that. I think it's going really well. We've had a lot of great response and feedback, and so it continues to grow.
Jonathan Bender, the challenge of trying to keep up with a beat that's evolving this quickly, describe that for me.
I think it's really exciting. I mean, for me, I love the idea that I wake up over the course of a given day and I think I know what the story's going to be, but in reality, it turns out to be something else. I think having a vibrant Kansas City Star and having other food publications all reporting on the news
feeds into it.
It's the greatest scenario for me.
And you keep up with it how? How does a reporter keep up with so many moving parts?
Part of it is people are very savvy on social media these days, whether they are restaurateurs or eaters. I mean, there are so many almost junior detectives at this stage who are just really uncovering the latest. I think people really want to find out, okay, where can I go now? What can I do? How can I explore? And then the other aspect, I think, is developing a network of contacts within restaurants. There are chefs moving all the time and servers who really can serve as good reference points.
Just quickly, I wanted to run by a few things, Jonathan. You have a new Kansas City Breweries app. What is that?
We do. So as part of this idea of the restaurant scene changing, I think we're about to have this real microbrew revolution. You know, 4 breweries opened in this past year, 2 more at the Kansas City.
4 opened up in Kansas City?
They did. Breweries and brew pubs. So there's Green Room Burgers and Beer in Westport, Rock and Run in Liberty, and then in North Kansas City there is Big Rip and Cinder Block.
You do wonder what all this means for the traditional brew houses like, you know, Budweiser. And people these days, more and more, it seems to me, they want something different.
That's right. I think that's where the app came
from. I know they got their varieties and stuff that get you there, but boy, it's a different day.
Well, in St. Louis, when InBev bought Anheuser-Busch, you saw this explosion of local breweries that were locally owned. And the same thing's happening or will be happening in Kansas City, I think, with Boulevard selling a majority interest to develop Mortgart. You now have these microbreweries coming online, and that's the idea behind the app. It's essentially make your own tour. It gives you information about all these breweries that started and a recommended beer.
Jill, run us through or just mention a couple, if you can, some restaurants that are opening sooner. What's sort of new and different out there that maybe wasn't there a few months ago?
Yeah, let's see. Patrick Ryan of Port Fonda's got another one coming sometime this year. I'm not exactly sure when. Probably mid-year, I think.
Yep.
Sava should be opening very soon. That's Howard Hanna of the Rieger doing that little champagne bar in Westport.
That's the one you mentioned a little while ago, Jonathan. Yeah.
Hawthorne and Julep is opening soon. That, I believe, is Bo Williams and his wife.
They're actually going to be doing a pop-up at Michael Smith on Wednesday.
Oh, are they? That's great.
A pop-up. That means...
Yeah.
So that means basically like a one-night only, come try our cocktails.
Pop-up. I love foodie terms.
And there's another guy doing pop-ups that's real interesting. He's a little bit hidden. He's working for the Federal Reserve, Joe Shirley. And he's popping up with a company called Uberdyne. And I don't think he has stuff scheduled right now. He had a lot around the holidays, but people should probably go check that out and see what is coming on his schedule, because he looks really interesting as well. So, there's pop-ups, there's brick and mortars, there's food trucks, so there's just a lot of little venues to be watching. It seems like a lot of chefs are going for their second and third venue, so that's also going to be real interesting to watch how that plays out for them, because, boy, restaurants are a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time for this segment. I want to thank Jonathan Bender. Again, he blogs at recommendeddaily.co. And Jill Silva, the food writer and restaurant critic for The Star, she blogs at kansascity.com/chowtown. And you guys were great. Thanks for coming in. So good to have you.
Thanks
so much, Steve.